at that as well. And we all are. I mean, it's kind of hard for me to stand up here talking about this topic because this is something that I struggle with. You know, I would say this is the one thing we're all on common ground for. Not everyone struggles with pornography. Not everyone struggles with sexual immorality. Not everyone struggles with murdering, hopefully. Not everyone struggles with taking things that aren't theirs. But every single person in here, including me, struggles with saying proper things. Struggles with saying good things about other people. So frequently, that has not been the case for my life, and I am in deep need of forgiveness for that. But it's so interesting because it seems like this has become the norm. I'm certain that every single generation has experienced this truth about gossip, talking about people behind their back, saying things that aren't nice. Every generation has experienced that, but multimedia now has made it more profound. And so anytime you turn on the news, which is why I don't watch the news, you see the liberal left and the conservative right screaming at each other, not being able to finish a sentence, and then making ad hominem attacks about one another and assuming where the other side is coming from. I mean, it's madness. Politicians make ads about one another on TV. And I'll tell you this, like, if you stoop down to trying to make the other person look bad, I'm not going to vote for you. Because you've obviously run out of tactics. And that's the reality, though, of what has become normal in our culture. It's the same when you send your students to school. Bullies back in my day used their fists. Now people use their words, and they use those words on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat, if that's still around, and all that kind of stuff. And they attack people and they say rude things about others. They want to make people feel inferior. And that has become normal. And we would like to think that this line of thinking, that this way of living has not invaded the church, but it has. I can't tell you how many times people have not realized that I'm standing near them when they say something negative about me. Just to let you know, I lurk in the shadows in the corners of this church. I hear everything that is said. But it's so, I mean, it's so mind-boggling how many times I've heard people comment on the fact that I wear jeans to church. And I've said, the next person who says that to me, I'm going to slap them, okay? Because Jesus does not have a problem with this. He also does not care if you wear slacks or if you wear some headdress in here. It doesn't matter. But we talk about one another in that sense. And people don't just talk about me. They say a lot of negative things about all of you too, okay? So I want you to feel included on this, that we are all on the same level. People are talking about you. They're talking about me. I'm talking about you. You're talking about me. And it goes round and round, and it becomes normal. And here's the thing. We like to think that this doesn't exist in the church because we want to appear perfect. We want to seem better than we are. And yet we are no different than the outside world. People ask all the time, Pastor, you know, why aren't more people Christian? I just don't understand why people don't come to church. Really? You don't understand why people come to church? If we are no different, and we call ourselves Christians, and we say that we follow Jesus, and yet we still talk about people, and we still gossip, and we still say rude things and hurtful things about others, why would anyone want to come here? I mean, we sit here. And I'm going to be funny about this, right? And we talk about the Baptists down the street and how they're wrong. And they're sitting there talking about how we're wrong. And the Anglicans are talking about how the E-Free Church is wrong. Why? We're talking bad about each other constantly within Christianity. Why would anyone ever want to join this movement? This is the reality of what we deal with. And so as I looked through the text this week and as I was reading through James, man, these words just started cutting to my heart. But verse 9 stood out to me above all else. With the same mouth that we use to bless our God, we curse those who are made in His image. Maybe we could even add to that. With the same mouth that we use to sing songs, we maliciously gossip about the people that we sing songs with. With the mouth that we use to lift up fervent and earnest prayers to God, we use that same mouth to berate our spouse and our children. Let's just be honest. We use our words a good part of the time to be destructive rather than constructive. We use our words to be life-draining and life-taking rather than life-giving. We use our words not just as weapons to wound, but as weapons used to kill other people. You don't believe me? I was at Waffle House on Friday, sitting there in all my clerical garb. They don't give me a discount for that, in case you're wondering. I was preparing for a funeral I was preparing for today, and this couple sits down in the booth next to me. The first thing that I made fun of them for in my mind was the fact that they had to look at the menu. If you have to go to Waffle House and look at the menu, you shouldn't be at Waffle House, okay? You should already know what you want. I get the all-star breakfast, eggs over medium, hash browns scattered and smothered, no grits, no toast, and a plain waffle, and city ham, not that nasty one with the bone in it. They didn't know what they wanted. Then one of them ordered a T-bone from Waffle House. So they were sitting there and they were talking, and then this guy walks in. Super long hair, super long beard, what I can only imagine is like some Rastafarian hippie witch doctor, and sits down with them and they start discussing their wedding. Their wedding planning at Waffle House over T-bone and eggs. There's something not right with this picture. And I was hoping the whole time, like, man, I wish somebody were sitting across to me so I could make fun of them with someone else. So I decided to post it to Facebook instead. And a lot of you liked it. Is that right? Probably two questions. Am I right for posting it? Are you right for liking it? Was it constructive at all? It was funny. I'm a funny guy. That's why I posted it. But was it helpful? I mean, this is a small thing. I wasn't necessarily making fun of them on the internet. I was just essentially saying what they were doing. This Rastafarian hippie witch doctor was planning a wedding with two people who don't belong at Waffle House. But it's so much more in our life. Because we're constantly going after people for things that don't matter to people who we shouldn't be talking to. And it's become normal for us. It's become normal. And as I was realizing, like, how messed up I am, as I read through James 3, I was just like hit by this weight of guilt. And the words that came to my mind were words from one of my favorite Christian songs, How Deep the Father's Love for Us. It was written by Stuart Townend the year before I was born, 1990. And the second verse says, "Behold the man upon the cross, my sin upon his shoulders. Ashamed I hear my mocking voice cry out among the scoffers." Now, I would like to think that if I were there at Golgotha with Jesus being crucified, I would have stood up for him and I would have said, "This is wrong. This guy is good. He doesn't deserve this." But the reality is that every time I talk about someone behind their back maliciously, every time I am destructive with my words and I use them as weapons to kill, every time I say poor things about you, it's like I'm standing at the cross with a hammer in my hand, just nailing that nail a little bit deeper and deeper into Jesus' hand. My voice cries out among the scoffers. And to cope with the reality that I'm the reason Jesus was on the cross was a difficult one this week. But this is the norm for us. And so the question we have is, what can change us? What has the ability to change our minds? What has the ability to quit let us going with the crowd and instead help us focus on the cross? Because the crowd will always say, "Do whatever you want. You have free speech. This is America. You should be able to say whatever you want to at the expense of hurting anyone or anything else." And yet the cross sends a much different message. Because the cross gives an example of what words can do. Jesus gives us an example of what words should do. Just take it as an example. Jesus walking to Golgotha with this heavy cross on his back. People are spitting on him and throwing things and saying rude, mean, vulgar things. If I were Jesus, I would have used my words to just kill everyone right then and there. Have this legion of angels come down. It would be awesome. But Jesus doesn't use his words to do that. And when they put him on the cross and they nail his hands in and they strip him down and put him up like this naked scarecrow for everyone to see, Jesus could have used his words to pronounce eternal damnation for every single person there, because the reality is they all deserved it. And so do I. And so do you. And instead, Jesus uses his words to call on his Father and say, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." See, Jesus uses his words a lot differently than we use ours. Jesus' words kill in order to make alive. Jesus' words bring us into a relationship with him. Jesus' words pronounce forgiveness time and time again to us who have been unfaithful. Jesus' words call us out of the crowd and to the cross, because it's only by living with the cross in our foresight that we will ever learn to watch our mouth. It's only by living under the authority of the cross that we will finally start to realize that everyone around us is just as much in need of grace as we are, and that everyone around us was created in the image and grace of God. This week was kind of a hard one for me. In all honesty, the last 2 weeks have just been super long. I haven't had a day off since Labor Day, and I enjoy what I do. I like being a pastor, but things, once you start putting a lot of things on your plate, you start to just kind of crumble. And so I preached last Sunday, I had to preach Wednesday, then I had a funeral on Thursday that I had to preach at, and then I had to do a burial on Friday, counseling on Saturday, and preach today. And on Wednesday, I was thinking, like, what am I going to say? Because eventually, I don't mean this to sound weird, because the Bible is the living word, right? But you start to look at Scripture and you just say, like, what can I say that hasn't already been said? Like, I just want to get up and say, hey guys, quit sinning, okay? Be good people for once. You're making me look bad in front of God. That's what I would like to say sometimes, but I can't. And I was stressed out because I was thinking, how can I make this message on Wednesday good and still focus on the funeral for Thursday to make this family feel comfort, and then at the same time preach on Sunday to the same group that I preached to last week? And I was just sitting there crumbling, like, in my office, and Ashley, our next director of Next Generation Ministries, walked in on Wednesday, and she's so perky, all right? And she said, "What are you working on?" And I looked over at her with, like, the straightest look on my face, and I said, "Well, I got to preach tonight, I got to preach tomorrow, I got to do a funeral on Friday, I got to be here on Saturday, and I got to preach on Sunday." And she looked at me, and she didn't say a word, and she just walked out. And then later on Wednesday night, after service, she came up to me, or maybe it was the next morning, but she gave me this bag. And this bag is filled with notes from kids in our youth group. Nice words put on paper. The one that's just right on top right now says this: you're so caring for everyone. You always show me Christ's love. You put your heart into everything you do, and it shows. Keep being awesome, you. It's those words made a huge difference in my week. My love language is words of affirmation, and I hate to admit that because I do not liking other people's approval. I would like to think that I don't care about what any of you think of me, but that's not true. My wife is really good at words of affirmation for me. I keep this file in my desk of words of encouragement. All these notes will go into that file, because they're at least once a month, honestly once a week, I just want to, like, quit and go sell shoes or work in a grocery store or something, because it's, I mean, anything would be better than this some weeks. And so I pop out that file and read why I'm doing this, and read these words. See, these are letters that remind me of the words Jesus uses for me. Because obviously we could all be called wretched, and yet Jesus calls us clean. We could all be called sinner, and yet Jesus calls us saint. We could all be called too far gone, and yet Jesus calls us redeemed. His words bring life. His words speak life into the deepest part of our hearts, and we need those words. So here's my encouragement for you this week: to take some time and to sit down and to write notes to people and tell them about this gracious love that you've experienced from God, and show other people that love, because other people need to hear it. Other people need to hear that they're doing okay and that they're going to make it and that you love them. Here's a good challenge. Why don't you write that note to somebody that you really don't like? Maybe somebody that you just talked about yesterday. I've got a long list going that I need to write notes to. No one in here, right? It's all the 8 a.m. service. Better yet, instead of writing a note, why don't you just tell people? And you show them the same love that Jesus has shown you, and use those words that you want Jesus to use for you. And remember to always watch your mouth.